This is Mulberry Christian Radio with our national news report. Sanctuary City, Chicago has reportedly ordered its police force to refuse calls for help from ICE agents who are under siege by increasingly violent protesters in support of criminal illegal aliens. Several police unions have denounced Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson and his police leadership for allegedly ordering officers on the street to refuse to help immigration and customs enforcement officers and other federal law enforcement officers as they face protesters, some of whom are now using automobiles as weapons to attack agents. According to the New York Post, when ICE officers made calls over the radio for assistance, a Chicago police dispatcher replied, "We're not sending anybody out to that location." It was also reported that Chicago police vehicles sat immobile nearby as agents were attacked. The inaction infuriated the nation's largest national police union, which said in a statement that it was shocked and appalled at the Chicago Police Department leadership's refusal to help ICE agents who were under siege. The president of the National Fraternal Order of Police and the Illinois Fraternal Order of Police blasted Chicago's chief of patrol, who reportedly directed officers not to assist ICE agents, Fox News reported. Details are still emerging, but it appears that officers from the Chicago Police Department were ordered not to assist a group of ICE agents while they were physically threatened by what appeared to be an angry mob. National FOP President Patrick Yost said, "Let me be clear, both the National FOP and the Illinois FOP believe that when an officer calls for assistance, you answer no matter what." Meanwhile, the Department of Homeland Security is blaming the increasing violence that ICE faces in Chicago and other cities on sanctuary politicians who are stirring insurrection to achieve their political goals. Thankfully, none of our law enforcement was killed because of these deranged criminals' attacks on law enforcement. Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin said in a statement, "This is exactly what happens when Governor Pritchett and Mayor Johnson and other sanctuary politicians denounce ICE and encourage illegal aliens to resist law enforcement." McLaughlin also pointed out that ICE has suffered a 1,000% increase in violence directed at them. And Florida's Lake County has approved naming a road in honor of Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk. Commissioner Anthony Sabatini, a former state representative, made the announcement this week. "Huge news. My resolution to name a road in honor of the great Charlie Kirk just passed 5-0, he announced. Lake County is now the first local government in the nation to name a road after the great at Charlie Kirk 11. "Thank you to my colleagues on the Lake County Commission and to Floridians across the state who supported this proposal. Hoping more counties and cities across the country follow our lead. For Charlie," he added. Turning Point USA spokesman and executive producer of the Charlie Kirk Show, Andrew Colbert, also posted about the news. "Amazing, and what I hope is the first of many. Lake County, Florida has just named the road after Charlie Kirk. I would love to see Charlie Kirk highways all over America as an enduring reminder of his sacrifice for this country, he said, thanking Sabatini for spearheading the efforts. Despite the fact that this was passed in a unanimous vote, WESH reported that it triggered heated public debate, with most speakers vehemently against honoring Kirk in this fashion. Before he was assassinated, Charlie Kirk personally invited Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin to speak at the TPUSA event at Virginia Tech. This week, Governor Youngkin honored that request and went beyond politics, speaking about Jesus and praying over the students. And if you missed last Sunday's memorial service for Charlie Kirk, you can watch the live stream. A grand jury indicted former FBI Director James Comey Thursday, and he turned himself into authorities yesterday. Comey became the first director of the Bureau to be indicted. Texas is the seventh state to enact laws protecting privacy and safety in women's spaces. Governor Greg Abbott signed Senate Bill 8 on Monday. It takes effect on December 4th. A Rockwell, Texas church baptized almost 700 people last Sunday after hundreds came to hear the Word of God. And at the University of Pittsburgh, student athletes organized an evangelistic event with nearly 600 people attending. Pitt for Jesus. The son of well-known apologist Sean McDowell believes that he encountered a demonic manifestation while evangelizing in New York City. And after months of court appearances, a Chicago judge has dropped a serious case against street preachers who were arrested twice for peacefully sharing the gospel. An Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke to the United Nations General Assembly yesterday, the day after President Trump remarked that he will not allow Israel to annex the West Bank. The president also made a sharp turn this week in his statement about the Ukraine war. And parents are sounding the alarm after AI chatbots have led children to take their own lives, commit sexual acts, and in the case of one lawsuit, encouraged the teen to kill his parents. And this week, the White House warned women not to take Tylenol while pregnant, believing that the acetaminophen may cause autism in their unborn children. The medical community is divided over the claim. And on this week's edition of Healthy Living, Dr. Eric Scalise, president of Hope for the Heart, discusses the Care and Counsel Handbook. It equips readers with biblical advice about how to deal with issues such as addiction, abuse, grief, anxiety, parenting, and more. And the CBN film Oracles of God will be in theaters across the country on November 2nd, 3rd, and 5th. Watch the trailer. And Frankie Muniz started Malcolm in the Middle and is now a racing professional. And this week's edition of Studio 5 takes a first look at the new film, Gabby's Dollhouse. The reading and math scores for American 12th graders have hit a 20-year low, according to a study from the National Assessment of Education Progress. In the area of reading, these are the worst scores in the history of the study, which launched in 1992. The study also showed that eighth graders lost a lot of ground in science and that the gender gap between boys and girls in science, technology, engineering, and math returned after nearly being equal in 2019. Per NBC, the assessments were the first since the pandemic for 8th graders in science and 12th graders in reading and math. Scores for our lowest performing students are at historic lows. Matthew Sardner of the National Center for Education Statistics told NBC, "These results should galvanize all of us to take concerted and focused action to accelerate student learning. While the pandemic had an outsized impact on student achievement," adds the news report, "experts said failing scores are part of a longer arc in education that cannot be attributed solely to COVID-19. School closures and related issues such as heightened absenteeism. Also blamed are increased screen time, shortened attention spans, and a decline in reading longer form writing both in and out of school, along with a shift in how English and language arts are taught in schools, with an emphasis on short texts and book excerpts. One teacher said that 20 years ago, students were assigned 20 books a year. Now it's closer to 3. President Trump's Education Secretary Linda McMahon told NBC that despite spending billions annually on numerous K-12 programs, the achievement gap is widening, and more high school seniors are performing below the basic benchmark in math and reading than ever before. She said this is why the administration wants the states to have more control over education money, education dollars. Money is definitely not the problem. Americans spend more per pupil than most developed countries and score lower than many. If you can't educate a child with an average of $18,086 per pupil in taxpayer money, you won't be able to educate them with twice or three times that amount. The system is broken. The problem, of course, is that the totally unnecessary COVID school closings demanded by the corrupt teachers' unions did irreparable damage to an entire generation of kids. Then there is the overall problem with a disastrous government-run school system that works for rich kids and school employees, but not so much for the rest. Public schools have become bloated jobs programs, relentlessly defeated from instituting any improvements by corrupt leftist public unions that should be outlawed, that block incentives like merit pay for teachers. Then there's the utterly destructive Federal Department of Education that stupidly promotes one-size-fits-all mandates on a vast, pluralistic country where such an approach will always fail. Thankfully, Trump is looking to gut the DOE. We also see too many schools worried about teaching everything but the very skills required to become a functional adult: reading, writing, arithmetic, civics, and critical thinking. Instead, a crazy left-wing cult of social engineers has taken over too many school districts where indoctrinating with social justice takes priority over everything else. Unless you are lucky enough to live in a decent school district, until the public school system is destroyed and rebuilt in an image that cares more about students than narcissistic teachers, the answer is homeschooling. The other answer is vouchers, so anyone, especially poor kids, stuck in Democratic-run disastrous schools can attend private schools. Democrats talk about equity, but if equity means removing children from the left's demonic influence by sending them to a private school, Democrats show their true colors. And Pennsylvania's Democratic Governor Josh Shapiro is extremely aggrieved by President Donald Trump's pointing to leftist violence and referring to individuals perpetrating it as scum. Shapiro attempted to spread blame around by stating that no one party is immune from political violence. Shapiro woefully ignored the track record of leftist violence in the country, from Charlie Kirk's assassination to the assassination attempts on Donald Trump to the transgender school shooters to breakouts of rioting across the country over the deportation of criminals and the stated that no party is immune to such violence. No one party is immune from political violence. My family and I can attest to that. Using the rhetoric of rage and calling some of our fellow Americans scum, no matter how profound our differences, only creates more division and makes it harder to heal, he said. We are at an inflection point in America. Violence transcends party lines, and the way to address it and have true peaceful debate is for leaders to speak and act with moral clarity. That needs to start with the president, he said, placing blame on Trump and completely ignoring the fact that Kirk did just that, engaged in peaceful debate with those who disagree with him, and was in fact doing it at the moment an assassin fired the shot that ended Charlie Kirk's life. Shapiro's response followed Trump's telling reporters, "The problem is on the left, it's not on the right, like some people like to say. When you look at agitators, you look at the scum that speaks so badly of our country. The American flag, burnings all over the place, that's the left, not the right." Trump's remarks came as many conservatives across the country remind leftists that the right fundamentally reacts to tragedy much differently than the left does, reminding everyone of the violent George Floyd riots that destroyed portions of cities. Yet after Charlie Kirk's murder, conservatives did not riot, light cars on fire, or throw rocks at law enforcement, but held countless vigils across the country honoring the conservative icon whose life was taken from him far too soon. It should also be noted that Shapiro also made no mention in his post of the numerous leftists across the country callously celebrating the murder of a 31-year-old husband and father. And President Donald Trump announced on Wednesday that his administration would be designating the far-left radical activist group Antifa a terrorist organization. "I am pleased to inform our many USA patriots that I am designating Antifa a sick, dangerous, radical, left disaster as a major terrorist organization," Trump wrote. "I will also be strongly recommending that those fundings Antifa be thoroughly investigated in accordance with the highest legal standards and practices. Thank you for your attention to this matter." A White House official later told CNN that the designation is just one of many actions the president will take to address left-wing organizations that fuel political violence. The president's move comes in the wake of the conservative activist Charlie Kirk's assassination at Utah Valley University at the hands of a young man allegedly animated by left-wing ideology. As Breitbart News reported, White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller pledged to use the whole of the federal government to target and dismantle the organized left-wing domestic terrorist movement in the United States. While Antifa has described itself as an anti-fascist organization, its members have often engaged in doxing, violence, and intimidation, as reported by Fox News. The bullet casings found near the suspected weapon used to assassinate Charlie Kirk were engraved with "Hey Fascist, Catch" and Bella Sia, Sia," which stems from anti-fascist song popularized by the Italian resistance during World War II. And Amazon has agreed to pay $2.5 billion to settle FTC allegations that the company tricked and trapped consumers into signing up for Prime memberships and hindered their attempts to cancel the subscription. FTC Chairman Andrew Ferguson said the Trump Vance FTC is committed to fighting back when companies try to cheat ordinary Americans out of their hard-earned pay. CNBC reports that Amazon has reached a $2.5 billion settlement with the FTC over allegations that the company engaged in deceptive practices related to its Prime subscription program. The settlement announced comes just 3 days into the trial between Amazon and the FTC in a Seattle federal court. The FTC had filed its lawsuit against Amazon in June 2023, accusing the e-commerce giant of deceiving tens of millions of customers into signing up for Prime memberships and making it difficult for them to cancel their subscriptions. The lawsuit also sought to hold three senior Amazon executives individually liable if the jury sided with the FTC. Under the terms of the settlement, Amazon will pay $1 billion in civil penalty to the FTC and refund $1.5 billion to an estimated 35 million customers who were affected by what the FTC called unwanted Prime enrollment or deferred cancellation. The company has not admitted any wrongdoing in agreeing to the settlement. The agreement prohibits Amazon from misrepresenting the terms of Prime and requires the company to make clear and conspicuous disclosures about the program's terms during the enrollment process. Additionally, Amazon must obtain consumers' express consent before charging them for a subscription and provide an easy way for users to cancel their membership. As part of the settlement, two Amazon executives, Prime boss Jamel Gahandi and Neil Lindsay, a senior vice president in the company's health division, who previously held a role in the Prime business, will be prohibited from engaging in unlawful conduct related to the allegations. FTC Chairman Andrew Ferguson called the penalty a monumental win for the agency under the Trump administration, stating the Trump-Vance FTC is committed to fighting back when companies try to cheat ordinary Americans out of their hard-earned pay. The $2.5 billion penalty is one of the largest ever imposed by the FTC, second only to the $5 billion fine levied against Facebook, now Meta, in 2019 for violating consumer privacy. However, the fine represents only about 0.1% of Amazon's current market cap of nearly $2.4 trillion. And a report says the FBI reported 274 plainclothes agents to the U.S. Capitol when the January 6, 2021 protests erupted. The Just the News article published said the agency secretly deployed those agents, citing an after-action report that had remained under wraps for the past few years. Scores of FBI agents and personnel, many from the Bureau's premier Washington field office, sent anonymous complaints to the after-action team detailing how agents were sent into an unsafe scenario without proper safety equipment or the ability to identify themselves readily as armed officers to other police agencies, the report obtained by Just the News shows. The article contained the most persistent complaint was that the Bureau during the James Comey and Chris Wray era had become infected with political bias and liberal ideology that treated the protesters from the summer 2020 Black Lives Matter riots far differently than those arrested in the aftermath of the January 6th episode. The FBI should make clear in its personnel and public that despite its obvious political bias, it ultimately still takes its mission and priorities seriously. One employee wrote in a stinging review, "It should equally and aggressively investigate criminal activity, regardless of the offender's perceived race, political affiliation, or motivation. And it should equally and aggressively protect all Americans, regardless of perceived race, political affiliation, or motivation." The Blaze cited a senior congressional source who claimed the number of 274 was not surprising because the FBI has been known to embed counter-surveillance personnel at large gatherings. Previously, Department of Justice Inspector General Michael Horowitz said in December that over two dozen confidential human sources were outside the Capitol building during the protest, according to Breitbart News. The FBI only assigned three CHSs to be present during the protest, and the report emphasized that none of the sources were authorized or directed by the Bureau to break the law or encourage others to commit illegal acts, the outlet said. It cited the report as stating, "Today's report also details our findings regarding FBI's CHSs who were in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. Our review determined that none of these FBI's CHSs were authorized by the FBI to enter the Capitol or a restricted area or to otherwise break the law on January 6th. Nor was any CHSs directed by the FBI to encourage others to commit illegal acts on January 6th. In February, Representative Jim Jordan said Americans are entitled to answers. When it came to the federal response on January 6th, 2021, per Breitbart News. The National Guard is blowing into the Windy City. For weeks, tensions have been brewing in Chicago over increased immigration enforcement, including some violent clashes between protesters and ICE agents. On Saturday, President Trump authorized federalizing Illinois National Guard to deploy 300 guardsmen to Chicagoland to deal with the lawlessness. Illinois Governor Pritzker criticized the move, saying there is no need for military troops in the Prairie State. Meanwhile, a federal district court blocked Trump from deploying 200 guardsmen to Portland, Oregon until at least August 18th, saying the President of the United States claimed that unrest in Portland was out of control was untethered to the facts. The White House has applied and deployed some already federalized California National Guardsmen to Oregon, a move that California Governor Newsom called a breathtaking abuse of the law and power. Pentagon has carried out its fourth lethal strike in a month on an alleged drug bolt. Four people were killed in the attack that War Secretary Hegseth said protected Americans from poison. Last week, a leaked memo sent to Congress said Uncle Sam is in a non-international armed conflict with drug cartels, suggesting further military action is coming. Elon Musk became the world's first half-trillionaire last week. His fortune briefly crossed $500 billion last Wednesday, powered by a jump in Tesla stock and out-of-this-world valuations for SpaceX and XA1. His net worth, tracked in real time, now tops the GDP of 83% of countries, including Denmark and Malaysia. Sean Diddy Combs was sentenced to 4 years in prison. In July, the disgraced music icon was found guilty of transporting women for prostitution, but not guilty of his most serious charges, racketeering and sex trafficking. Diddy's attorney promised to appeal, saying the judge repeatedly mentioned coercion during sentencing, despite the jury finding no coercion occurred. President Trump's troop moves are facing legal hurdles. President Trump claimed an insurrection is underway in Portland amid immigration enforcement protests and lawlessness, and told reporters he was willing to invoke the Insurrection Act, but so far it hasn't been necessary. Federal judge blocked his attempt to deploy any guardsmen in Oregon until at least August 18th, calling the administration's justification untethered to the facts. The White House has appealed. In Chicago, federal agents are continuing a large-scale immigration crackdown, saying they targeted the worst of the worst. Trump activated 300 Illinois guardsmen plus 400 from Texas to support the effort. Illinois and Chicago officials have sued to block the deployments, arguing they're unconstitutional. A federal judge allowed the troops to deploy for now, but ordered the government to file a response by midnight. There's a new editor-in-chief in town. Barry Weiss, founder of the Free Press, became the new leader of CBS News after CBS parent Paramount acquired their four-year-old digital media outlet for $150 million. Weiss, a former New York Times writer, has criticized mainstream newsrooms for succumbing to liberal groupthink and promised fair, fearless, and factual journalism from CBN. Critics say the polarizing 41-year-old lacks experience. OpenAI just made a deal to challenge Nvidia's AI chip dominance. The makers of ChatGPT announced a multi-billion-dollar partnership with chipmaker Advanced Micro Device, AMD, to collab on AI data centers that will run on AMD processors. Sam Altman's company said the 6-gigawatt computing boost is imperative for OpenAI missions to reach all of humanity. AMD stocks soared 23.7%. and troop deployments in Chicago, Portland, and Memphis are continuing to cause a stir. In the Windy City, 200 Texas National Guardsmen members arrived to protect federal property and agents amid ongoing unrest. President Trump defended his actions, saying Chicago Mayor Johnson and Illinois Governor Pritzker should be in jail for failing to protect ICE officers. Johnson and Pritzker said it's unconstitutional and they will not back down. In Oregon, protests have also persisted in the City of Roses, where the National Guard has been legally prohibited from entering Portland city limits amid legal battles. And in Tennessee, National Guardsmen are expected to be walking in Memphis. Meanwhile, Uncle Sam borders have been historically quiet. The Trump administration announced 237,565 border apprehensions took place in 2025 fiscal year, the fewest since 1970. And the grand jury indicted New York Attorney General Lethea James, alleging mortgage fraud. James is known for winning a civil fraud case against President Trump in 2024. Meanwhile, former FBI Director Comey pleaded not guilty to making false statements to Congress in 2020. His attorney will request the case be dismissed for vindictive prosecution, citing Trump's public calls for the arrest. She's still working 9 to 5. Dolly Parton posted a video caption, "I ain't dead yet," after her sister's request for prayer on Facebook sparked health moves. The 79-year-old says she's undergoing a few treatments and postponing the December Las Vegas show to rest, but is still here pouring herself a cup of ambition. A major nor'easter is brewing off the East Coast, expected to bring strong winds, heavy rain, and coastal flooding from the Carolinas to the Northeast seaboard. Power outages are likely from Outer Banks to Long Island, though not tropical in origin. If the storm intensifies, it could turn into a Karen, subtropic storm Karen. And uncovered texts from Virginia Democratic candidate for Attorney General are disrupting the Commonwealth's closely watched governor's race. In 3-year-old messages, former State Representative Jay Jones suggested the then Virginia House Speaker, a Republican, deserved to be killed, also wishing death on his children. Jones called the message a grave mistake. Governor candidate Abigail Spanberger condemned the violent rhetoric but didn't withdraw support for Jones. And Maine's Governor Janet Mills is telling Democratic senators that she will launch a bid against GOP Senator Susan Collins, per multiple sources familiar with the conversation. This is a huge get for Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, who is on the recruiting tier, but Mills will have to contend with a crowded field of Democratic challengers who don't wait to jump in while she made up her mind. and Senator Bernie Sanders has endorsed Crystal Farmer, Graham Platner, and Childers Senate Democrats for continuing to recruit Mills. And finally, House Majority Whip Tom Emmer will report raising $6 million in the third quarter, bringing his total 2025 fundraising to $22 million. A former NRCC chair, Emmer has posted strong quarterly totals. Team Emmer has brought in $56 million since becoming whip in 2023. And this concludes our weekly national news report brought to you by Mulberry Christian Radio. Till next time, have a blessed week.